that's from. Now, with that said, this is going to affect not just WBAI, but also WMYC, WKCR, and WBGO. So this is not a solitary thing there. It's not an exceptional thing. There, a couple of radio stations will be affected by this maintenance shutdown as well. I just wanted to share that information with you and just give you a heads up that although the terrestrial air will not be functioning at that time, there will be streaming. Okay, so WBAI won't be totally off on whatever ether it's supposed to be on. So just FYI on that. So just keep tabs once again from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. starting on Tuesday, August 23rd, continuing through Friday, August 26th. There will be that maintenance shutdown from the transmitter where we broadcast from, for Times Square. It is 1 minute past 6 p.m. Stay tuned for an abbreviated version of Democracy Now! Coming up.
Democracy Now! We remember the life and legacy of Albert Woodfox, a former Black Panther who spent nearly 44 years in solitary confinement, longer than any prisoner in U.S. history. He died of COVID at the age of 75 Thursday, 6 years after he was freed from the Angola prison in Louisiana.
I remember reading something from Mr. Mandela, and he said, if no of a cause, there's no way you can carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. And I thought what we were doing was a noble cause. So we were prepared. And so the beatings and the gassings and the decades of solitary confinement, you know, was really all so painful and difficult. It never got to the point where they were able to break us.
We'll hear Albert Woodfox in his own words and speak to his brother, his attorney, and Robert King, who has imprisoned Angola with Woodfox for decades. The two of them and the late Herman Wallace were collectively known as the Angola Three. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department's announced federal criminal charges against four former and current Louisville police officers over their roles in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor. Her death in a hail of police gunfire in March 2020 sparked protests across the United States and around the world under the banner Black Lives Matter. Former Louisville Metro Police Detective Joshua Janes was taken into FBI custody Thursday morning and charged with obstruction and civil rights violations. Also charged were Louisville Police Sergeant Kyle Meany, Officer Kelly Hannah Goodlett, and former Louisville Police Detective Brett Hankison. This is the head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark.
Breonna Taylor should have awakened in her home as usual on the morning of March 13, 2020. Tragically, she did not. She was just 26 years old. As Attorney General Garland just stated, today's indictments allege that Louisville Police Detective Joshua Janes and Sergeant Kyle Meany drafted and approved what they knew was a false affidavit to support a search warrant for Ms. Taylor's home. That false affidavit set in motion events that led to Ms. Taylor's death.
After headlines, we'll go to Louisville, Kentucky for the latest on the charges against the four officers involved in Breonna Taylor's killing. The two white officers who actually shot her were not charged. Ukrainian officials are urging residents to evacuate the eastern Donetsk region and head west under a mandatory evacuation order for thousands of people. The order came as Russian troops intensified their assault on Ukraine's east, where President Volodymyr Zelensky said his troops are facing hell on the battlefield.
field. Meanwhile, a new report from Amnesty International finds Ukrainian forces are endangering the lives of civilians by establishing bases and operating weapons systems in populated residential areas, including in schools and hospitals. Amnesty says such fighting tactics violate international humanitarian law. The report drew an angry response from President Zelensky.
Aggression against our state is unprovoked, invasive, and frankly terroristic. And if someone prepares a report in which the victim and the aggressor are allegedly the same in some way, if some data about the victim is analyzed, while something that the aggressor was doing at that time is ignored, then this cannot be tolerated.
In a statement, Amnesty International said, quote, being in a defensive position does not exempt the Ukrainian military from respecting international humanitarian law, unquote. According to Russia, has found WNBA basketball star Brittany Griner guilty of drug smuggling and sentenced her to 9 years in a penal colony. During closing arguments Thursday, Griner took responsibility for bringing vape cartridges containing a small amount of cannabis oil with her through the Moscow airport, where she was arrested by customs authorities in February. She said the cannabis was prescribed for medical reasons.
I understand everything that's being said against me, the charges that are against me, and that is why I pled guilty. But I had no intent to break any Russian laws. I made an honest mistake, and I hope that in your ruling that it doesn't end my life here.
President Biden called Brittany Griner's 9-year prison sentence unacceptable and promised to work to bring her home. Earlier today, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the Kremlin remains ready to discuss a prisoner swap involving Griner and former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, who's been jailed in Russia on espionage charges since 2018. China says it'll sanction U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her immediate family over her visit this week to Taiwan's capital, Taipei. On Wednesday, Pelosi became the most senior official to visit Taiwan in a quarter of a century from the United States. Her trip prompted China to launch large-scale military exercises in waters around Taiwan that effectively blockaded the island. Pelosi spoke to reporters earlier today as she wrapped up her tour of Asia in Tokyo, Japan, and after China's foreign ministry called her actions vicious and provocative.
They will not isolate Taiwan by preventing us to travel there. We've had high-level visits, senators in the spring, a bipartisan way, continuing visits, and we will not allow them to isolate Taiwan.
On Thursday, Pelosi led a delegation of U.S. lawmakers who traveled to South Korea and toured the demilitarized zone that divides the Korean Peninsula. Her trip came, as the United Nations said in a new report, North Korea has made preparations for a new nuclear weapons test this year, which would be the first such test since it exploded a hydrogen bomb in 2017. Back in the United States, Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema said Thursday she'll support a budget reconciliation bill containing some of the Democrats' legislative priorities on health care and the climate crisis. As a condition of her support, Sinema demanded Democratic leaders agree to abandon a provision that would close the so-called carried interest loophole, a tax break exploited by hedge fund and private equity managers to pay lower tax rates than middle-income workers. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said a revised version of the bill would be released on Saturday. In Arizona, former TV news anchor, Trump supporter Carrie Lake has won the Republican gubernatorial primary. Lake narrowly defeated lawyer and businesswoman Karen Taylor Robson, who had been had the support of Vice President Mike Pence and other prominent Republicans. Carrie Lake put false claims about a stolen 2020 election at the center of her campaign and has said she would not have certified President Biden's victory. Her victory follows other Arizona election deniers who won Republican nominations in Tuesday's primary, including candidates for Congress, Senate, and Secretary of State. The Biden administration's declared monkeypox a public health emergency. Thursday's declaration by Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra comes 2 weeks after the World Health Organization declared the disease a global emergency. Officially, the United States has recorded nearly 3,000 cases of monkeypox, though the true toll is likely far higher due to severe shortages of testing. New York public health officials have discovered poliovirus and samples of sewage taken from outside New York City, suggesting the virus is spreading in the community and that hundreds of people may have already been infected. Officials have tied the polio lineage discovered in Rockland County to recent samples taken in Israel and the United Kingdom. Polio mainly affects children and can sometimes cause paralysis or death. The United States declared the disease eradicated in 1979, but officials warn that unvaccinated people remain vulnerable. Only 60% of Rockland County's two-year-old children have been vaccinated against polio. That's 60%. In Florida, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis is facing backlash after he suspended Hillsborough County State Attorney Andrew Warren over Warren's promise not to prosecute people who seek or provide abortions in Florida. Warren, who's a Democrat and has been elected twice, condemned DeSantis's move as, quote, an illegal overreach and said his suspension, quote, spits in the face of the voters. DeSantis spoke in a news conference Thursday.
I was shocked at the blatant violation of one of the most fundamental principles of our democracy, that the people, the voters, get to elect elected officials. I've been elected twice to serve as state attorney, and I've served as state attorney, and I've done it well. Crime is down. We're protecting people's rights. We have fought so hard for public safety and fairness and justice. If the governor thinks he can do a better job, then he should run for state attorney, not president.
That's Hillsborough County State Attorney Andrew Warren. Governor DeSantis signed a bill into law in April that bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The measure's facing several legal challenges. The FBI has arrested former Puerto Rico Governor Wanda Vasquez over her alleged involvement in a bribery scheme to finance her 2020 gubernatorial campaign. Vasquez is accused of accepting bribes in 2019 and 2020 while she was governor from several people, including Julio Martin Herrera Velutini, a banker who is under investigation by the agency that oversees Puerto Rico's financial institutions. In exchange for the donations, Vasquez reportedly demanded the resignation of the agency's director and later appointed a new one, a former consultant of Herrera's bank. Vasquez, Herrera, and a former FBI agent also face wire fraud and conspiracy charges and up to 20 years in prison if convicted on all counts. In Austin, Texas, a jury has ordered far-right conspiracy theorist and InfoWars host Alex Jones to pay $4.1 million in compensatory damages to the parents of Jesse Lewis, a six-year-old boy killed in the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. For years, Alex Jones spread conspiracy theories that the Newtown shooting was a government hoax and the victims' families were paid actors, resulting in online harassment and death threats for Sandy Hook families. The jury is expected to reconvene today to decide how much Jones should pay the parents in punitive damages. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Albert Woodfox, who was held in solitary confinement longer than any prisoner in U.S. history, has died at the age of 75 due to complications of COVID-19. The former Black Panther and political prisoner won his freedom 6 years ago after surviving nearly 44 years in solitary confinement. He helped establish the first chapter of the Black Panther Party at the Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola to address horrific conditions at the former cotton plantation. In 1972, he and a fellow imprisoned Panther, Herman Wallace, were falsely accused of stabbing prison guard Brent Miller to death. Woodfox and Wallace always maintained their innocence and said they were targeted for their organizing with the Black Panthers. Miller's own widow would later urge the state of Louisiana to free Albert Woodfox after she became convinced he was innocent. Woodfox, Wallace, and a third Black Panther, Robert King, were collectively known as the Angola Three. For decades, Amnesty International and other groups campaigned for their release. Robert King was freed in 2001. Herman Wallace was freed in 2013 only after a federal judge threatened to jail the warden of Angola prison if he refused to release him that day. Herman Wallace died one day after his release of liver cancer. But the state of Louisiana continued to refuse to release Albert Woodfox. He was eventually freed on his 69th birthday, February 19th, 2016. 3 days after his release, Democracy Now!'s Renee Feltz and I interviewed Albert Woodfox in his first live TV interview. Albert Woodfox, can you talk about your plans today? You've walked out of the prison. You haven't been free in 45 years. What are you most struck by? What are your greatest challenges now or your moments of joy since Friday?
For me, you know, as strange as it may sound, you know, when I was in prison, I had established who I was and ways to fight for what I believed in. Being released in society, I'm having to learn different techniques, you know, of how to, I'm just trying to learn how to be free. I've been locked up so long, and a prison within a prison. So for me, it's just about learning how to live as a free person and just take my time. Right now, the world is just speeding so fast for me, and I have to find a way to just slow it down and, you know, just enjoy my family. That's been a great source of energy, being able to sit down with King and laugh and touch him, and he touched me, and hug each other and stuff, is, you know, grateful. He has been a man that ever since he walked out of prison, he has spent the last 15 or more years of his life fighting for to get me and Harmon out. And, you know, there are very few human beings who have shown the character and the strength and the determination as my friend and comrade Robert King. You know, the Black Panther Party may not exist, but we still exist. Mm. And we will continue to struggle to free some of our comrades and to, you know, just stand, you know, shoulder to shoulder and try to take on all of the injustice that we can that goes on in America every day.
Albert, it's so great to have you join us. Can you explain the significance of going to visit your mother's gravesite and why that was the first place that you wanted to go?
Well, when my mom passed away, I had made requests to go to her funeral and say my final goodbye. Warden Burr Kane denied that request, and the same thing happened with my sister when she passed away. My family and friends had made arrangements to allow me to go and say goodbye. Again, Warden Burr Kane denied that. So for some years now, there has always been this emptiness when it came, you know, to my mom and my sister, because I never had a chance to say that final goodbye. And so that's why it was important that one of my first acts of being free was to relieve that burden off of my soul.
That was Albert Woodfox speaking on Democracy Now!, February 22nd, 2016, 3 days after his release, after over 40 years in solitary confinement. Following his release, Albert would go on to spend years speaking out against solitary confinement while campaigning for the release of other political prisoners. He also wrote a remarkable memoir with Leslie George titled Solitary, Unbroken by Four Decades in Solitary Confinement, My Story of Transformation and Hope. The memoir won an American Book Award and was a finalist for both the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award. In 2019, Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez and I interviewed Albert Woodfox in our New York studio after the publication of the book.
And how do you feel today? How have you adjusted after 43 years in prison?
Well, hopefully. You know, Robin and I still travel around across America and outside of America to talk about solitary confinement, which we believe is the most horrible and brutal non-physical attack upon a human being by another human being. Throughout my four decades plus of solitary confinement, I've watched men go insane. I've watched men physically hurt themselves, trying to deal with the pressure of being confined to a 9-by-6 cell, 23 hours out of every 24-hour period. And being free now, I still suffer, claustrophobic attacks. I'm able to address them better now because my physical movement is beyond 9 feet now. And so, I can walk in my house, I can go in the backyard of my house, I can go on the sidewalk, or there's a park, which I often visit a block and a half away from my house. So the only remedy for me when I had claustrophobic attacks was the space, So this has made it easier to deal with
And you write, gassing prisoners was the number one response by security to deal with any prisoner in Angola who demanded to be treated with dignity. In the 70s, we were gassed so often every prisoner in CCR almost became immune to the tear gas. You were being gassed in solitary confinement.
Yeah, well, the sergeants were provided with these little, it's like a little deodorant can, And if you would try to get a certain, like more toilet paper, or you complain about the toilet in your cell not working, if the officer didn't like the way you were talking, or if you were trying to defend yourself for being handled in a disrespectful manner and stuff, they would squirt the gas in your face, And usually that would be followed by they would come into your cell and beat you and handcuff you, then bring it, put you what's called a dungeon,
In the book, you describe very graphically the situation at Angola when you first got there, before you were in solitary, and the rampant rapes that were occurring in the prison. And once you became politically conscious and you were returned there, you talk about how you insisted that on your in your section of, that there was going to be no more rapes. And talk about that and the impact that your political organizing had on the way you dealt with your fellow prisoners.
Well, the incident that started the prison chapter of the party to form anti-rape squads was, I was in my dormitory, I was housing Hickory Ford at that time, and this young kid was assigned a bed across from me. And the saddest thing I've ever witnessed in my life is to look at another human being and see that his spirit has been shattered. And this kid, he was just sitting there, and I could see tears rolling out of his eyes, I always have believed that in life, an individual incident raises your level of consciousness. And so once your level of consciousness is raised, you become aware of whatever conditions, individuals, and so how you respond to that, it's pretty much determined on that level of conscience. And I think at that moment that I said, I can no longer accept this. I can no longer tolerate this. So the next day I had a talk with Harmon Wallace. And we had, we used to go out on the football field. That's how we used to have our meetings. like we were practicing football, throwing the football around and having political discussions and stuff. And so we discussed with the other members about, you know, the rape and slave trade that was going on in Angola. And so we decided to start providing protection for these kids coming in to let them know that they had other options other than being made victims, you know?
How did you maintain your sanity 44 years in solitary confinement?
Well, I think the fact that, you know, I was a member of the Black Panther Party, I had a political conscience, I had values and principles instilled by, you know, my mom that I grew into. You know, I didn't realize how much my mom had, you know, built and set a foundation in me, even though I was resisting it. And, you know, over the decades, there was, you know, we had programs geared toward making the men better. We had schools. We used to hold schools and political classes. And you know, but, you know, as many battles as we won, as many men as we saved, as many men as we helped to keep their sanity, we lost, you know, twice as many men, you know. And I just told him, I said, well, I can help you learn how to read and write, but you got to really want it. You got to want this better than anything. And so I use a dictionary starting off, you know, and dictionaries at the bottom of each page. There's a sound key on how you pronounce words as to how they spell, you know, and I taught him about, you know, vowels and adjectives and, you know, just basically, you know, and show him, you know, teach him how to shape words and he really wanted it, you know, because I told him, I said, you know, anytime, I don't care what night or day, you hit a wall, you call me. And he called me 2 and 3 in the morning, you know. And I can't pronounce this word. So I would ask him to spell it. And then I'd remind him of, you know, the voice key at the bottom of the page and how you pronounce, you know, alphabets as, you know, and help him, you know.
He was in solitary, too.
Yeah, he was about 3 or 4 cells down from me.
How do you communicate? How did you communicate with other people in solitary?
Well, you talk high up and down the tier, you know. This is one of the way I developed the habit of waking up in the very early, you know, a.m., because the tears stop showering. There's no noise. The doors are not opening and closing. And, you know, so you are able to really concentrate on what you're doing. So even now, you know, I wake up 3:30, you know, in the morning, you know, and this is when I do most of my reading. I still try to read at least 2 hours a day. So there are some things, habits that I developed in prison I still try to hold on to.
Your final thoughts as you go out into the world, as you travel the world, taking advantage of every moment in the free world?
Well, you know, my hope has always been, you know, for a better humanity. And to try to be a part of that, to try to say something or do something that will make, if there's no more than one human being, stop and think and, you know, start a dialogue that can change into a movement. You know, I've always said that one individual can cause chaos. Mass movements can cause change. So, you know, I still firmly believe in that. And so that's, you know, Robin and I and Harmon, you know, we were in prison. The one thing we always noticed is that we didn't have a voice. And because of the men and women and children that were hid behind the walls of prison and in solitary, nobody knew what we looked like. So we had made a vow that we would be the voice of those men and women and children, and we would be the face. You know, I think what people in America and around the world have to realize, that prisoners don't come from another planet. They come from your family. They come from homes and they might make mistakes. Usually the economic system brings the pressure. And, you know, I mean, I know that there's a very small percentage of human beings who do some horrible things, you know. But the overwhelming majority, you know, come with, you know, they come, you come from a family. You don't come from an alien planet. And they need to, you know, remember that, and they need to love them and support them, you know, because prisons are all any state institution without it, without oversight and without consequences, unchecked power corrupts. And that's the situation you have in prisons in this country.
Former Black Panther Albert Woodfox speaking on Democracy Now! In 2019, shortly